Welcome to the weekly Dharma Talk podcast from the Columbus Karma Teksum Choling Buddhist Meditation Center. This week's Dharma Talk is entitled Shantideva and the Path of Love, Part 2, by Lama Cathy Wesley. In the 8th century, the Indian Buddhist saint Shantideva said that, except for perfect bodhicitta, there is nothing that can overcome the overwhelming strength of evil. But how do we practice bodhicitta? How do we train ourselves in the love and compassion that counteracts the evil in the world? Lama Cathy teaches basic compassion meditation practice as a foundation for this path. If you like our Dharma Talk series, please consider donating to Columbus Karma Teksum Choling at columbusktc.org. Enjoy the podcast.
Good afternoon. I'm Cathy Wesley. Thank you very much for being with us today. So first things first, it's important for us to start with a motivation, and the motivation I'm hoping will be of the highest motivation, which is that we'll make the dedication that our time together today be used for the benefit of all suffering beings. So I'm going to recite a short prayer. This will be in the Tibetan language, but you can join in your heart and in your mind, thinking that you dedicate this time that we're spending together today. We're dedicating it to the benefit of all beings. O sanje chudan so chi chonam la jang chu bardu dani kyap su chi daji jin so ji pe sunam ki drola penchi sanje dru parsho. And then the second prayer is the prayer of the four immeasurables, which we talked about last time. And in English, it's may all beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May they be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. May they have that great happiness, which is freedom from suffering. May they dwell in great equanimity, free of attachment and aversion to those near and far. And then one final prayer, and we'll be ready to begin. O palden sawe lama rinpoche tagi chi or pede den shula kadren jembo kone che sunte kusun tugi ngutrup sao dusun. Okay, thank you. Last week, we talked about the topic, which is Shantideva and the practice and path of love. And we talked last week about the verses in chapter one of the Way of the Bodhisattva, which is Shantideva's text, in which he describes the path of love and compassion that all of the enlightened beings of the past have traveled. So that's what we talked about last week. We talked a little bit about the first chapter, and in which it describes the excellence of bodhicitta. And we talked specifically about verses 5 and 6, where Shantideva says, as when a flash of lightning rends the night and in its glare shows all the dark black clouds had hid, likewise rarely through the Buddha's power virtuous thoughts rise brief and transient in the world. So this first verse talks about how rare it is for human beings to have pure, selfless motivation. And that rareness is like the rareness of the light that occurs when a flash of lightning happens at nighttime. And so we might feel from this verse, chapter 1, verse 5, we might have the feeling that things are looking pretty bleak and hopeless. But then he responds immediately with verse number 6, where he says, thus, behold the utter frailty of goodness. Except for perfect bodhicitta, there is nothing able to withstand the great and overwhelming force of evil. So what he's saying here is that even in the darkest moments, there is hope, in that all of us have the potential to become awakened beings. All of us have a mind, and that mind has basic goodness, and basic wisdom, and that if we practice the taming and training of our minds, we can uncover that basic goodness and live from that place of basic goodness, as opposed to the place of all of our clouds of confusion. In Buddhist literature, they often talk about our awakened nature, our Buddha nature, as being like the sun that can be hidden momentarily behind the clouds, but is nevertheless always present. And so I jokingly call this the good news of Buddhism, that we all have the potential to awaken and all have the potential to become Buddhas. And that is what he's meaning here. Except for perfect bodhicitta, there is nothing able to withstand the great and overwhelming strength of evil. So that's what we talked about last week. And I think that what we've been going through this week, because it's we're somewhere about maybe, oh, I don't know, somewhere between 12 and 15 weeks into the pandemic of COVID-19. And we're several days down from the horrific events in Minneapolis earlier this week, when a black man in police custody was killed by the force applied to him when he was being restrained. And so there has been an incredible feeling of sadness washing over many of my spiritual friends and Dharma friends this week, as they attempt to cope with the feelings that they've had because of the happenings and events of this week. It's been a little bit hard to take, especially the reaction, which is completely understandable, of people to this terrible injustice. When demonstrators go into the downtown areas of cities around the country and they demonstrate for justice, frequently there's a bubbling over of anger and a bubbling over of frustration, and then violence erupts. And this violence then itself becomes a force that is very frightening. I remember a long time ago, Kempo Carter Rinpoche, when he was giving teachings about humanity, he talked about the fact that one human being can have an impact on the entire world if they have the power to do so. But the other powers that human beings have come in groups. He said that when negative people all get together and they are influenced by hatred and anger, they can turn into an angry mob that does great damage. But then he also said that when people come together to accomplish something good, something that comes from the heart, something that comes from the highest place within humanity, that also can have a very positive effect. So I think that right now we're in the period of reaction, where everybody is suffering a great deal because of the sadness of seeing everything that's happened. And I was talking to one of my Dharma friends this morning, and she gave me a way of talking about this that I was very grateful for, because she looked at it as being intense sadness. And she said, if we could just sit with the sadness and see the sadness for what it is, and then begin to reason together to find ways around the injustices that we've identified, this would be a very positive step. She also said something else that I thought was really helpful, in that it is that the problems we're encountering now and the pain and suffering that's being uncovered now is generational. And I think that's a very important thing to say, because you can look at it from the social science point of view and see that systemic racism and systemic injustice can go from generation to generation to generation without much change. But also, healing can happen generation after generation after generation. We have to make that shift. And I don't know how we can make that shift societally, but I do know that we can make that shift individually. And we've talked about that in the past. In Buddhism, we talk about group karma. The fact that as human beings, we have karma that is shared. In other words, we see the world in specific ways. And we see them in this specific way because of our humanity. And again, my Dharma friend from this morning said, this morning, as we consider our karma, we have to realize we can also change our karma. And so I think that if we find ways to comfort and help each other right now, even though that's not the immediate result, I mean, not the immediate solution to injustice, calming each other and comforting each other and supporting each other through this difficult time, I think is the beginning. And I know it sounds very trite today to be quoting Mr. Rogers, but it does really make sense what he said. When times are difficult, he said, look for the helpers, look at the helpers. And this means look at the people who are trying to make things better. When we look at this past week and we see what the mayor of Atlanta said, and all of the people who have been trying to find ways to channel the rage and find ways to constructively engage people on difficult subjects of systemic injustice that has lasted for generations. We have to find ways to do this, because if we don't, then we're going to be doomed in some ways to repeat the negativity of the past over and over again. The Buddha even talked about this in his very first chapter in the Dharmapada, where he talked about how difficult it is to give up bad negative habits. He said, if we look at people who harm us and then we think how negative they are and wish for revenge, he said, then we will live in hate. But if we give up such thoughts, we will live in love. And then, if you remember, I quoted the statement from the Dhammapada that later was used by Mahatma Gandhi, and then even later by the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., who said, hate never once dispelled hate. Only love dispels hate. This is the law, meaning this is the truth, ancient and inexhaustible. And so if we can continue to return and to comfort each other in this moment, and then urge ourselves toward dialogue and discussion, this is probably going to be what we can do. If we look for the helpers, if we own our own potential for good, if we own our own potential for transformation, then this is something we can do on an individual level. I know that if we look at the injustices of the past, if we look at the horrific things that have happened, the racism and injustice that has been in our country for 400 years, if we look at the difficulties that have arisen in other parts of the world, the anti-Semitism that has destroyed more than 6 million lives in the Holocaust, if we look at how other groups of people have survived and become resilient, this will give us some strength as we work to become resilient ourselves today. There's often a feeling of inertia, of being held in place by the horrific nature of events. And there must be some way that we can move ourselves away from that inertia. And there must be some way to move ourselves forward. And interestingly enough, it happens. This is discussed by Shantideva in The Way of the Bodhisattva. He talks about how to move from the inertia into action. If you remember, if you remember how his book is laid out, he talks in the first chapter about how amazing bodhicitta is. And in the second chapter, he prepares us for taking the bodhisattva commitment. And in the third chapter, he leads us in taking the bodhisattva commitment. The first chapter is about how powerful bodhicitta is. Now, remember, bodhi means awakening and citta means mind. And so it's a mind that is trained in love, a mind that is trained in compassion, a mind that is trained in wisdom and seeing things clearly. And so bodhicitta is what we all, a power we all possess within us that we can actually develop and create momentum for in our lives. And through the practice of mindfulness and quiet sitting meditation, we can come to know our thoughts and minds and be able to slowly change our thoughts and minds one moment, one breath, one thought at a time. by recognizing our patterns, we begin to decide what kind of change we want to make. And then through the miracle of love and compassion, first having love and compassion for ourselves and then for others, we can actually change how we feel about ourselves and others in the world. So in the first chapter, Shantideva basically calls bodhicitta the alchemical substance that turns base metals into gold. This refers to the medieval practice of attempting to create gold from iron. But what he's really talking about here is if we apply aspiration and action, bodhicitta, to our lives and to our minds, we can turn this ordinary body of flesh and blood, which is the base metal of the analogy, into the body of a Buddha, which is the gold in the analogy. And if we can do this, then we will have accomplished good just for ourselves, not just for ourselves, but for all beings. Because then one enlightened person becomes the cause for many others to become enlightened as well. And so that's what happens in chapter one. He talks about how amazing bodhicitta is, that it can actually enlighten us and change us from our confusion and our self-centeredness into being other-centered and other-helpful. But in the second chapter, we prepare to take the bodhisattva vow, the bodhisattva commitment. We can't just say, oh, bodhicitta is great. We actually have to make a commitment to carrying that out. It's sort of like the discussion in the literature, such as the literature that was written after World War II, when Viktor Frankl, the great author, wrote about man's search for meaning and said that if we can hold a purpose and a meaning for our lives, then we can actually become resilient if we have purpose and meaning in our life. And I think that the power of this is cannot be understated. Again, this morning, my Dharma friend talked about how giving birth to one small aspiration, one small moment of bodhicitta, can actually transform our entire being. And this is discussed by Frankl and other authors who write about the things, the resiliencies that helped the Jewish people survive after the Holocaust. And my friend this morning was telling me about an example from a concentration camp story about a young child who saw one of the other young children in the camp was feeling depressed and sad. And she took a small wild strawberry. You've seen these. They grow at the borders of lawns, even everywhere. They grow through cracks in the sidewalk. And they're the tiniest little strawberry fruits, and they're very sour fruits, but they are fruits nonetheless. And so the child took one of these little weeds of strawberry, the little fruit of the strawberry, and took a small leaf and placed the little strawberry on the little leaf and offered it to her friend who was feeling sad. And this tiny gesture changed that person's life. And I think that the symbolism of the tiny berry on the tiny leaf and handing it to someone in need is, it's a way of talking about the transcendence and redemption that can come to us from just one small kind act. It transforms us as an individual and gives us an insight, a clue into how we can change everything within us in just one small moment with one small gesture. So these stories of hope may seem to be wishful thinking in an age where systemic racism and systemic violence have disrupted the lives of so many all over the world, that there are downtrodden people all over the world who are mistreated, and how can we solve this? How can we do this? And I think that the power of little stories, like the little leaf being handed to the small child, there's a truth to these stories that makes them true, not just in a factual way necessarily. They're not true in terms of a factual way, but in a human way, a spiritual way, a way of the heart. And so I remember when Kempo Karsa Rinpoche was talking to us at first, way back, and when he first started sharing Dharma with us in the United States, he said, the Buddhist teachings may be 2,500 years old, but they're not irrelevant. Because just as water was nourishing and quenched the thirst of people in the past, so too now water continues to quench our thirst and nourish us. And he said, in the same way, the truth of the Dharma, the truth of this, these small moments of kindness changing our lives for the better, the truth of these small moments, it remains true. The Dharma remains true, and both now and in the past. So if we can apply ourselves in this way to our Dharma practice, then we will have this fruition, not just now, but always. And so I think that when we look at the guide to the Bodhisattva's way of life, or the way of the Bodhisattva, as a map of how we can begin to take this attitude of bodhicitta and nourish it and expand it, is important and powerful for us. And in the second chapter, of the Bodhisattva's way of life, Shantideva talks about how we can prepare ourselves for taking the Bodhisattva vow. And what's interesting is that the second chapter of Guide to the Bodhisattva's Way of Life is, it begins with a confession. And I know that a confession of our own faults, and I know that might sound strange to people, because isn't it about love and compassion? And if so, what good does it do for us to confess our faults? I've thought about this, and it seems to me that the purpose of having a confession come before the actual taking of the Bodhisattva vow, the purpose of having that confession first, at least in my own limited mind, is that by taking responsibility for who we have been and what we have done, it provides us with a clear seeing, a clear method of seeing who we are, a clear admission of who we have been. And by seeing this clear admission of who we have been in the past, clearly bringing that to mind and clearly regretting it and clearly resolving not to repeat that in the presence, making this confession in the presence of all enlightened beings, the beings who embody our goal of awakening. If we can rely on these Buddhas and Bodhisattvas as our witness, regret and recall and regret the wrongs we have done, embrace the remedy of honesty, of self-honesty and self-purification, and then finally resolve never again to repeat these actions, we will have these four powers of confession with us that will help us prepare our minds for taking the Bodhisattva vow and commitment. And so in the second chapter, I'm just going to read a couple of verses from this. I'm going to start a little bit later in chapter two, not near the beginning, but where he talks about these four powers of confession. He starts by saying, and this is verse 27, chapter two, verse 27, to perfect Buddhas and Bodhisattvas in all directions, where they may reside, to them who are the sovereigns of great mercy, I press my palms together, praying thus. Then he goes to verse 28. In this and all my other lifetimes, wandering in the round without beginning, blindly I have brought forth wickedness, inciting others to commit the same. 29. I have taken pleasure in such evil, tricked and overmastered by my ignorance. Now I see the blame of it, and in my heart, O great protectors, I declare it. And then it goes on talk about the regrets that the author feels about all of the wrongs that one has done. And it says, I openly declare these faults of mine to you, the teachers of the world. And then he says that he cannot, he says, basically he said that he says, the thought has never come to my mind that I should regret these things. And so he regrets them, and then regretting them, he makes the aspiration that he never repeat them again. And I think the power of this is that by saying, I have not been who I could be, he's readying himself to be what he could become. The important thing for me in this section that I've just read, number verse 29, I have taken pleasure in such evil, tricked and overmastered by my ignorance. It's interesting, tricked and overmastered by my ignorance. What I think he's talking about is how we all fall into negativity. It's as though we're walking down the street heedlessly and fall into a hole. And by falling into this hole, we suffer. But there's some willfulness to it. And what it is that is willful is that we have been tricked and overmastered by ignorance. And the ignorance he's talking about here is the ignorance of seeing ourselves as being different from others, seeing ourselves as being separate from others, seeing ourselves as being perhaps better than others. And that sense of superiority over others, being superior to others, we're overmastered by that. And it's our selfishness then that takes hold of us in this situation. And it's our selfishness that leads us into treating others badly, thinking that somehow that makes us victorious. And this desire for being victorious or for getting revenge when we feel that we've been harmed, it leads to just more injustice and more violence and more difficulty. Someone has to be able to stand in the middle and shout, this is the end. This must stop here. And I think that this is why the great beings of the past who fought for justice through nonviolence, this is what gave them their power, was that they were nonviolent and they were able to stand against injustice with silence, stand against with injustice with their presence, their powerful presence. And I think if we look to their example, maybe it's old-fashioned. Maybe this sort of thing won't work now. Maybe violence is the only thing that people understand. But someplace inside me, I just can't see that violence will be a solution. I think that it will just make people hate the people who have caused violence. And then we will have an excuse to continue our prejudice. We will have an excuse to continue our selfish superiority feelings, and we'll never get to the bottom of or the end of injustice. In any case, in chapter two, this self-honesty that Shantideva engages in is something that we need to do. And so for ourselves, what we might want to do today is we might want to take a quiet moment of reflection and look at the ways in which we ourselves have fallen victim to our own ignorance and our own feeling of separateness and our own feelings of superiority. If we think about all of the beings we have harmed, if we think about all the beings that we have felt superior to, we might actually see that we ourselves have been oppressors. And sometimes the being we are oppressing is ourselves. Maybe we take a negative attitude toward ourselves and then begin to see that we are somehow evil and at fault, when really what we could do is look at ourselves as a parent would look at us, as a being who is basically good, but needs to be re-guided, to be guided in a different direction. So I see my friends are asking questions in the comments, and I thank you for that. We take questions via comments on Facebook. I have not opened comments on YouTube yet, but what I'll do is I will be able to read the comments after the talk today, and reading the comments after the talk, I'll answer them on the Facebook page. What I'm thinking that we could do in this moment of quiet reflection is take responsibility for all of our negativity. But at the same time, I think we also have to take responsibility for all of the good that we have done. See, Buddhism is about balancing and coming to the middle path of awakening. Awakening is a middle path. It's not all one or it's not all or nothing. It's not yes or no. It is coming to understanding and balance in our life. And so as we recall the bad things we have done and feel regret for them and make resolutions that we not repeat them, this confession practice is wonderful. But we also, on the other hand, should think about all the good that we have done, rejoice in it, and make the aspiration that we will continue to expand it as we go forward in our lives. And then if we can have that moment of quiet reflection, then we should follow that moment of quiet reflection with a moment of aspiration. The way of the Bodhisattva, in the way of the Bodhisattva, chapter 3, begins with a statement of aspiration bodhicitta, making the aspiration that we change ourselves for the better through the practice of love and compassion. And some of the most beautiful aspirations I have ever read are in chapter 3. And if you remember previously when I was talking about how to work with our own feelings of powerlessness and our own feelings of being inadequate, that we could make the same aspirations that Shantideva makes in the way of the Bodhisattva. And so if we could get hold of a copy of the way of the Bodhisattva, there are many, many translations. My favorite one is the original Padmakara translation. I like that the best because it's written in a type of meter that can be read out loud and maybe even sung. I'm going to open to chapter 3, verse 4, because what we could do after we make our confession and our confession of faults, then we have the basis of making an aspiration, and we could make the aspirations as they're in this text. He talks about in chapter 3, verse 4, he says, "The intention, ocean of great good, that seeks to place all beings in the state of bliss, and every action for the benefit of all, such is my delight and all my joy." And so for the person who wishes to change their minds and add more love and compassion into their lives through cultivating specific thoughts in their minds, starting with the intention is important. Even if we don't feel that we have enough power to accomplish that aspiration right now, because of course we're not enlightened beings yet. We can't perfectly accomplish our wishes. We're held in by all of those ignorances and all of our negative mental afflictions. We're held down by all of those things. We're held down by our selfishness and our pettiness and our jealousies and our impatiences and our graspings and clingings and our prejudices. We're held down by all of those things. So the way to overcome those things that are holding us down is to begin to rise up from within ourselves, begin to rise up with an intention that is different, that's not selfish, that is full of purity and goodness. And so he calls the intention an ocean of great good that seeks to place all beings in the state of bliss, meaning that we seek happiness not just for ourselves, but for all beings. And every action for the benefit of all, such is my delight and my joy. And so he says in chapter 3, verse 5, "I join my hands and pray. The Buddhas who reside in every quarter, kindle now the Dharma's light for those who grope bewildered in the dark of suffering. I join my hands beseeching the enlightened ones who wish to pass beyond the bonds of sorrow. Do not leave us in our ignorance. Remain among us for unnumbered ages." And so then we come into the section of the book that is my favorite to read out loud. And I have my Dharma friends read this out loud because it really, it can, I guess you could say, it can transform a person's attitude from within. And this starts with chapter 3, verse 7. I'm going to skip through some of the verses, but the ones I'm going to read are the ones that are the most uplifting. Starting at chapter 3, verse 7. And now through these actions now performed, meaning he's taking the bodhisattva vow, and through these actions now performed, by all the virtue I have just amassed, may all the pain of every being be wholly scattered and destroyed. Shantideva has just completed what is called the seven branches of offering, meaning that he's asked the Buddhas to be present, offered them offerings, asked for them to remain, has confessed faults, and so on. And now he's dedicating the goodness of all those actions, which will now be followed by taking the bodhisattva vow, with a vast aspiration. And the aspiration begins on verse 7, and it ends quite a bit later. So, and through all these actions now performed, by all the virtue I have just amassed, may all the pain of every living being be wholly scattered and destroyed. So he's actually asking for all beings suffering to be completely destroyed utterly by what he has just done. And then he makes these aspirations, starting on verse 8. For all those ailing in the world, until their every sickness has been healed, may I myself become for them the doctor, the nurse, the medicine itself. That's a powerful aspiration. May I become these things. Previously, he had talked about himself as being a person who, he actually even uses the words, I'm a sinner, I have done wrong. But now he's uplifting himself, saying, I have capability, I can become good. And so his aspiration is nothing less than becoming what every being needs. And so if you think about this, here goes what he's saying. For all those ailing in the world, until their every sickness has been healed, may I myself become for them the doctor, nurse, the medicine itself. Raining down a flood of food and drink, may I dispel the ills of thirst and famine. And in the ages marked by scarcity and want, may I myself appear as drink and sustenance. For sentient beings, poor and destitute, may I become a treasure ever plentiful and lie before them closely in their reach, a varied source of all that they might need. My body thus, and all my goods besides, and all my merits gained and to be gained, I give them all away, withholding nothing, to bring about the benefit of beings. Nirvana, meaning peace, is attained by giving all. Nirvana, the objective of my striving. Everything, therefore, must be abandoned, and it is best to give it all to others. And then he works through the difficult verses in which he invites negative beings who feel that he owes them a karmic debt. He basically says, may they harm me in whatever way they wish in order to repay my negative debt to them. Because in previous lives, we've harmed so many beings. And so he basically, like the great beings of the past, Mahatma Gandhi and Martin Luther King Jr., has offered their own body as a way of making right what is wrong. Then he says, starting in verse 16, he says, if those who see me entertain a thought of anger or devotion, may these states supply the cause whereby their good and wishes are fulfilled. This is a little bit of a difficult thing to think about, because often when we think of others who dislike us and who do not have our best interests at heart, others perhaps who hate us or fear us, we would like to not think well of them. We would like to think that they are somehow evil and wrong, and that we would wish to get even with such people. This is how ordinary worldly people who are exercising their selfishness, how they think. But the bodhisattva thinks instead of repaying the karmic debt he has to the others who he has harmed in previous lives. And he actually makes the aspiration that even if somebody sees me and hates me, may their hatred of me bring them gradually to enlightenment. Now, you may wonder, how is this possible? How could it be that a person's hatred of you could bring about their enlightenment? In order to illustrate this, we think of an episode from the life and passion of Jesus Christ, who impacted everyone he saw while he was suffering. And there were people who saw him suffering, who hated him, who nonetheless saw how he bore his suffering and were completely transformed and changed as individuals by seeing him. And so what transformed them was his person, his being, who he was. And the same can be said of all of the great beings who inspire us today just by thinking of them. Thinking of Jesus, thinking of Gandhi, thinking of the Buddha, thinking of Martin Luther King Jr., thinking of Mother Teresa. We think of them and instantly have a feeling of goodness because of what they've accomplished. And so I guess it is at least theoretically possible that even for those of us bodhisattvas who are merely aspiring to the path, even us, I guess you could call us student driver bodhisattvas or student bodhisattvas, even we could inspire somebody with our thoughts and words and being. So the way to start that is to make that aspiration. So in verse 16, he says that. If those who see me entertain a thought of anger or devotion, may these states supply the cause whereby their good and wishes are fulfilled. All those who slight me to my face or do me any other evil, even if they blame or slander me, may they attain the fortune of enlightenment. And then he goes on to make his powerful aspirations as he continues. Verse 18, may I be a guard for those who are protectorless, a guide for those who journey on the road, for those who wish to go across the water, may I be a boat, a raft, a bridge. May I be an isle for those who yearn for landfall, and a lamp for those who long for light, for those who need a resting place, a bed. For all who meet a servant, may I be their slave. May I be the wishing jewel, the vase of plenty, a word of power, and the supreme healing. May I be the tree of miracles for every being, the abundant cow. So this is this has to do with Asian legends about wish-fulfilling animals and wish-fulfilling trees. And then he goes on, like the earth and the pervading elements, enduring as the sky itself endures, for boundless multitudes of beings, may I be their ground and sustenance. Thus, for everything that lives, as far as are the limits of the sky, may I provide their livelihood and nourishment until they pass beyond the bonds of suffering. And then, after having made this vast aspiration, he takes the bodhisattva vow. Verse 23, just as all the Buddhas of the past embrace the awakened attitude of mind, and in the precepts of the bodhisattvas, step by step, abode and trained, and just so for the benefit of beings, I will also have this attitude of mind. And in those precepts, step by step, I will abide and train myself. I can't say enough good about this chapter and these lines, because if we can do what is talked about in these chapters and lines, even if all we can do is recite these things to ourselves and make this aspiration over and over and over again, slowly, gradually, we will come in contact with the teachings that will teach us how to accomplish it. Now, in the next installment of our conversation about Shantideva and the Path of Love, I think we're going to talk about, we've talked about the aspiration of bodhicitta and how just having the aspiration to benefit beings can transform our being such that we become a source of happiness for all who see us. Next time, we'll talk about the six perfect virtues, that help us to accomplish the action of bodhicitta. Today we talked about the aspiration of bodhicitta, but then we'll talk about the action that helps us to become the enlightened being who can actually accomplish all of the wishes that are made in these lines. So we're coming to the end of our time together today, and I would like to encourage everybody to take some time today. If not today, then when you have a chance this week, and have a quiet moment of reflection, reflecting on both the negative things one has done and regretting those and asking for forgiveness and purification for those and resolving not to repeat them. And also then recalling the good that one has done, rejoicing in it and making a resolution that one will continue in that path. And then if you get the chance to even if all you can do is say, may I become and train like the Buddhas of the past, may I become a bodhisattva for the benefit of all beings, even if that's all we can do this week, I think it's a powerful thing. And then trying to hold in your everyday life this aspiration to be of benefit to everyone you see, this wish to be of benefit is so powerful. And this wish to make those small gestures of offering, like the little leaf with the tiny strawberry on it, making these small gestures of kindness toward oneself and aspirations of kindness toward others, I think this will help us. So what I'd like to do now is take a quiet moment of meditation and then do a little bit of the Tonglen meditation that Kemp Rinpoche talks about in his book, Dharma Paths. So we'll start with maybe just about 1 or 2 minutes of quiet meditation, making the aspiration that our meditation be of benefit to all sentient beings and help to purify all the wrong that is done in this world. Sitting in the posture of meditation, beginning with the intention of benefiting others through our practice of meditation. Taking one deep breath, breathing out, and allowing our breath to come and go naturally. Staying with the breath as it goes out and comes in. Noticing distractions, labeling them thinking, letting them go, and then returning our attention to the breath for a fresh start. Then the Tonglen meditation as taught by Kempo Carter Rinpoche. Please join in meditating in this way. When you do this short meditation, first sit in meditation posture, relaxing your body and sitting rather comfortably. Then breathe normally, following the natural course of your breath. Imagine that with the exhalation of your breath, whatever merit you have accumulated from beginningless time are accumulating now and will accumulate in all future time. Think that it radiates toward all sentient beings. Just as when the sun shines, the rays of light radiate toward all places, so with your exhalation, these positive qualities radiate, bringing happiness, well-being, comfort, health and longevity to all beings without discrimination. Then, when you inhale, imagine that you are bringing in all of the suffering, confusion, sickness, turmoil, of sentient beings. All the suffering and turmoil of sentient beings merges with you, and this uproots the suffering and confusion of sentient beings. Because of the strength of bodhicitta, the power of your sincere attitude of wanting to benefit others, as soon as this suffering merges with you, it dissolves into nothing and disappears. It is just as if you had collected some dust together into a little pile and a strong wind blew it away. Inhaling and exhaling in this way, meditate for a short time. After you have meditated in this way for a short while, let go of the mental focus and let your mind rest in a state of awareness. Attempt to have the sense that there are no sentient beings to meditate on, there is no person meditating, and there is no act of meditation taking place. Try to transcend these three, which are relative, and give birth to something ultimate. Something effortless and spontaneous, like the arising and disappearing of clouds in the sky. Just remain in a state of clarity. There is no act, no thought of doing something outside or inside, no you doing something. Just cut off all of that and remain in a state of awareness. Okay, that concludes our time together today. And I want to thank all of you for joining and also for doing the meditation together, because our small little group here on YouTube and on Facebook, we just did something powerful to help ourselves and to help others. And it's my hope that you're able to do this during the week. And this will hopefully give you some strength. Next week, we'll be back at 1 o'clock, and we'll talk about action, bodhicitta. So we dedicate the goodness of this session to all sentient beings. I'll recite the short prayer in English. Through this merit, may all achieve the omniscience of Buddhahood. May it defeat our common enemy, wrongdoing, from the stormy waves of birth, old age, sickness, and death. From the ocean of samsara, may we free all beings. May we free all beings. May we free all beings. Okay, thanks everyone.
Thank you for joining us for this week's Dharma Talk. We hope you enjoyed the podcast. If you did, please subscribe, rate, and review it on iTunes. To learn more about the Columbus Karma Teksum Choling or to donate to support our Dharma Talk series, please visit our website at columbusktc.org. The opening and closing music for the podcast is Tibetan Flute Song by Tamding Arts at tamdingarts.com. Please join us again next week for another Dharma Talk.